At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
You're listening to GRayRecords.com, your place for music plus more.
Smooth like a river's flow. Stories told with the vibe so tight. G-Ray Records gonna light your night. Wisdom wrapped in a soulful sound. Turn it up, let the truth astound. Harmony lifting hearts so high. G-Ray Records podcast will never lie. Feel the beat of the lessons they share. Every word crafted, handled with care. From the deep to the light they glide. G-Ray Records keeps you inspired. Plug in G-Ray and let it play. Knowledge raining like a new day. R&B gospel groove so sweet. Let the podcast put you on your feet.
Should hear.
No limit dreams, cash flow streams, independent hustle, broke the seams, soulful echoes from the south we scream, master the game, chasing the gleam.
Imagine turning, well, really humble beginnings into this massive multi-million dollar empire, not just through talent, right?
Not just talent.
You're through this relentless, kind of unconventional business mind. Someone who literally rewrote the rules. That's the blueprint we're digging into today. Welcome to the deep dive. This is where we pull out the key nuggets of knowledge, the best insights from, you know, a whole stack of sources just for you.
Mm-hmm.
And today we are taking a deep dive into the, well, extraordinary journey of Percy Robert Miller. You probably know him better as Master P.
Yeah, the hip-hop mogul.
Exactly. But his story, it's really a masterclass in entrepreneurship and resilience, reinvention too. It goes way beyond just the music industry.
Way beyond.
So for this deep dive, we've looked at a great career review from G-Ray Records and also this really candid conversation. It's from the YouTube channel Traffic Sales and Profit with Lamar Tyler.
Oh yeah, that was a good one. He really breaks down his own strategies there.
He does. Yeah. So our mission today is basically to help you understand the, let's call it, unconventional genius behind his No Limit empire. And maybe more importantly, what surprising lessons his journey holds for, you know, anyone building something from the ground up.
Okay, let's do it.
Let's unpack this.
What's really fascinating, I think, right from the start, is how his early life, those humble beginnings, they weren't just background noise.
Yeah.
They were like the crucibles, you know, forging that entrepreneurial ambition. It was foundational.
Absolutely. Born in New Orleans, 1970, grew up in the Calliope Projects, which were pretty tough.
Mm-hmm. Tough place.
But here's where the story takes this immediate, kind of unexpected turn. He's just 19, right? And this opportunity pops up. A $10,000 malpractice settlement after his grandfather passed away.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people, they'd see that 10 grand as, you know, maybe a down payment, personal spending money, something like that.
To fix up the car, maybe.
Right. What did Master P do?
And this first move, it tells you so much. It's like this crucial entrepreneurial insight right there.
Yeah.
To see any unexpected money, doesn't matter how small, not his cash to spend, but his seed capital, strategic capital.
Ah, okay. Seed capital.
Exactly. So he took that $10,000 and immediately opened a small record store, No Limit Records and Tapes, over in Richmond, California.
Wow, okay.
And that little shop, that became the launch pad, the absolute launch pad for everything else.
Right.
That mindset, even at 19, reinvesting, it's like a blueprint for grabbing opportunities.
That proactive thing, it really kicks into gear when his music career starts getting some traction. You know, Getaway Clean in 91, Mama's Bad Boy in 92.
Right, things start bubbling.
But then comes what, I mean, most people would think is the dream offer, right? $1 million record deal from Jimmy Iovine, no less.
Wow, Jimmy Iovine, that's major.
For a kid from the projects, that's life-changing money. Has to be. And yet,
he turned it down.
He turned it down.
It's kind of astonishing, isn't it? Makes you ask, like, why? Why would someone from that background say no to $1 million? Well, it came down to his grandfather's wisdom. He always remembered him saying, never do business when you're desperate.
Hmm, powerful.
And when you actually look at the deal, the terms, I mean, it's incredibly restrictive.
How so?
A 7-year contract, for one. He wouldn't own the rights to his own name, his own masters, nothing.
Seriously, his name.
Yeah. And he'd only get like 12% royalty per record sold. 12 cents on the dollar, maybe.
Okay, that's not great.
Compare that to selling your own CD for, say, $20 independently and keeping almost all of it. The potential earnings difference was just, well, astronomical.
Right.
Understanding that, how predatory those traditional deals could be, that really became the catalyst, you know, for that fierce independence he's known for.
So instead of signing his future away, he goes in this completely different direction, an unconventional innovation, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
He called it trunk selling. Apparently, he saw an Avon lady selling Tupperware.
Tupperware.
Yeah, right out of her car in the neighborhood. And he thought, how did he adapt that?
Well, he basically became his own distribution network. Simple as that.
Okay.
Selling his CDs directly from the trunk of his car. He drives city to city, Atlanta, Texas, Chicago, New York, just hitting the streets.
Wow, road warrior.
And this wasn't just some, you know, quirky thing he did. It was deliberate. A low overhead strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And it paid off. He saved something like $300,000 doing that.
$300,000 just from selling CDs out of his trunk.
Yeah, serious capital.
Yeah.
And that money, that became crucial for his next move, which was honestly brilliant.
And this leads us to another, like, core No Limit insight, doesn't it? That real wealth isn't just having the cash.
No, it's not just stacking it.
It's invested capital, especially when you invest it in getting critical knowledge. So what did he do? He took $25,000.
25 grand.
And paid Michael Jackson's attorney, not to represent him, not for his own legal stuff.
Right, not for services.
No, purely to understand what the best record deals in the industry look like. Think about that risk. 25K just for info.
It's incredible. But that investment, it paid off big time. It gave him this truly revolutionary insight for back then.
Which was?
Learning about the distribution deal model. the distro deal. This model let the artist own like 85% of their masters. The distributor only took 15%. Totally flipped the script.
85% compared to that 12% offer.
Exactly. So he used that trunk money he'd saved up.
The 300 grand.
Yeah. And he secured one of these unprecedented distribution deals with Priority Records. Because, see, he had already built the marketing buzz and proof of sales they needed through all that trunk selling.
So he basically funded his own leverage.
Precisely. It just underscores his whole belief, right? Invest in yourself, invest in knowledge, not just flashy stuff like cars.
That's such a powerful philosophy, and you really see that self-investment shine through in his, like, core belief about success.
The 90-10 rule.
Yeah, yeah. That success is 90% business and only 10% talent.
Yeah.
That just fundamentally changes how we usually think about creative fields, doesn't it?
It really does. And what's fascinating is how that early experience running the record store at 19...
Or back to the beginning.
It taught him the retail business. And, crucially, how important it is to understand the customer. He learned what people actually wanted to buy.
Not just what he felt like making.
Exactly. Market-driven from the absolute start.
Which makes total sense when you look at his branding and marketing. It was, well, disruptive for the time.
Definitely.
You had artists like N.W.A., Ice Cube, the Ghetto Boys. They had this darker aesthetic, right? Defining the era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very influential look and sound.
Master P deliberately goes the other way. He shows up as Ice Cream Man. White suits,
yeah.
Completely different image.
Stood out immediately.
And then there's the logo, that iconic Diamond Tank logo.
Everywhere.
He put it on everything. Instantly recognizable. It was all about consistency.
He actually talked about that, drawing a lesson from a college professor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the professor said McDonald's doesn't just sell burgers. They sell consistency.
Yeah.
You know what you're going to get every single time.
Ah, okay. Makes sense.
So P applied that to his music output, which was, you know, prolific. And to all his other ventures. Keep the brand flavor consistent everywhere. Build that trust, that familiarity.
And his marketing smarts, they weren't just about the image. He had this really ingenious, cost-effective strategy, the bus bench strategy.
Oh, yeah, the bus benches. Classic.
Instead of dropping, what, $10,000, $40,000 on a billboard?
Which he probably couldn't afford anyway back then.
Right. He used $15 bus bench ads. 15 bucks.
It's brilliant. Such a prime example of like understanding your lane, innovating within your budget.
Not trying to play the same game as the big guys with huge marketing departments.
Exactly. Doing what you need to do your way.
And if we kind of zoom out, connect this to the bigger picture. Master P didn't just stick to music after the big hits, right? Like Ice Cream Man in 96, Make M Say Uh in 97.
No way. That was just the beginning, really.
That strategic diversification built on that initial music success, that seems key to his long-term impact.
Absolutely key. He leveraged that fame.
That's right. He jumped into movies. I Got the Hookup, Foolish. People remember those.
Yeah, they were big.
He launched No Limit Sports, famously signed Ricky Williams, the football player.
Huge deal at the time. Controversial, too.
Yeah. He did clothing lines, real estate. He even had that brief stint trying out for the NBA.
Right. Charlotte Hornets, Toronto Raptors, preseason. The guy tried everything.
He really did. And it worked. By 1998, Forbes had him as one of the top 10 highest paid entertainers.
Shows you the sheer breadth of the empire he built, right?
True.
They estimated it reached something like $400 million by the late 90s. Just incredible growth.
Incredible. And that diversification, that empire building, it kind of speaks to another core principle, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The family over everything idea that seemed to run through No Limit.
Mm-hmm. That philosophy really underpinned the label's longevity, I think. It allowed other artists, you know, Silk the Shocker, C-Murder, Mia X, Mystical.
Even Snoop Dogg, eventually.
Right, even Snoop. It allowed them to really thrive under that No Limit umbrella. It wasn't just about P's success. It felt like shared prosperity.
And you could really feel that. I mean, you mentioned the sold out 25-year anniversary concerts. Fans in their 40s, 50s still showing up wearing the camo.
Yeah. That's serious brand loyalty. It goes way beyond just liking a few songs.
Yeah.
It's an identity.
And where does that loyalty come from?
Well, I think part of it comes from P's philosophy of creating other millionaires. He talks about that a lot.
Right, building a team.
Yeah, fostering a real team atmosphere. Understanding that, look, if your artists are happy, if they're financially secure, they're going to stick around and contribute to long-term success.
Raises a good point for any entrepreneur, really. Are you just hiring people or are you actually building a team of empowered individuals?
Exactly. It's a different mindset.
And he's also emphasized that his why, you know, the reason behind all the hustle, It wasn't just about getting rich himself.
No, there was a deeper purpose.
He was really motivated, deeply motivated, to get his grandmother out of the projects. That purpose, it seems like it went way beyond just personal financial gain.
Community, family upliftment.
Yeah.
That was central.
And that long-term vision, that sense of purpose, is probably why he's now able to shift gears again.
Yeah. He's been incredibly open, kind of blunt, actually, about the music industry today.
Saying what?
Basically, ain't no money in the music industry anymore. Not for artists, anyway. Because the streaming revenue is just so low.
Mm. So it's not just him complaining, it's a critique of the system.
Yeah, he sees it as broken for creators. That's forcing him to adapt, to pivot.
So the pivot is towards tangible goods. Is that the phrase he uses?
Yeah, tangible goods. And this philosophy of product over talent. He draws that parallel to Michael Jordan.
How so?
Well, Jordan's enduring success, his wealth now, it comes from the shoes, right? The brand. Not just residuals from his playing days, it's the product.
Okay, I see that. Product over talent. But this new direction, it hasn't been smooth sailing, has it?
No, he's been very clear about that. He says entering the food industry has actually been harder than breaking into music.
Harder than music? Why?
Mainly, he says, because of the systemic lack of Black ownership and representation in that sector. It's just not a diverse industry at the top.
Which perfectly highlights this, like, systemic challenge he's trying to tackle now.
Exactly. And his motivation, it was really sparked by this Aunt Jemima moment, as he calls it.
What was that?
Well, for his grandmother, seeing a Black woman on a popular brand like Aunt Jemima, for years, she kind of perceived that as Black enterprise, you know, a symbol of success.
Okay, yeah, I can see that perception.
So her disappointment, her profound disappointment, when she learned that neither Aunt Jemima nor Uncle Ben were actually Black-owned brands.
Ah, that must have hit hard.
It really did. And it exposed this deep issue around ownership and representation. That propelled him to create genuinely authentic Black-owned alternatives.
Yeah.
Like Mama Snoop Oatmeal.
Right, with Snoop Dogg's actual mother on the box.
Exactly. His stated goal now, he says, is to beef with Quaker and Kellogg's. Not violently, obviously, but compete.
Compete by creating quality Black-owned products.
That's the plan.
So beyond just the specific businesses, it feels like the mindset itself, Master P's entrepreneurial mindset, holds the biggest lessons.
I think so too. It seems built on a few core pillars.
Like what?
Well, first, there's this unique take on the boss mentality. A boss gets paid last.
Okay, how does that work?
The idea is you're building an empire. You often go without profit yourself, especially early on, reinvesting everything.
Yeah.
That's different from a worker who expects, you know, that immediate paycheck.
Gotcha. Delayed gratification on a massive scale.
Exactly. Which leads directly to patience. He points out Rap Snacks, right? Which is a huge success now.
Yeah, those chicks are everywhere.
Took 25 years.
Right.
25 years to get that kind of widespread recognition. It just underscores that entrepreneurship. It's a marathon, definitely not a sprint.
25 years? Wow. That requires some serious belief.
And it connects to his view on risk, too. Coming from nothing, as he did. Kind of jokes about it, like instant grits, just add water, I'm gonna make some money.
Yeah.
His point is, there's no real risk in trying stuff when you started with zero. There's always a way to hustle, to figure something out. What have you got to lose?
That's a powerful perspective. Takes the fear out of failure, maybe?
Sort of reframes it.
Yeah.
He also really stresses having multiple revenue streams.
Right. Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
He aims for, like, seven or more. So if one venture slows down or fails, the others keep things stable. It's smart risk mitigation.
And his resilience. I mean, that Snoop Loop cereal thing was a good example.
Oh, yeah. The trademark issue.
Yeah. They got challenged on the name, had to pull the product. A lot of people would just quit there.
Mm-hmm. Cut their losses.
What did they do? They gave the cereal away to food banks and used the whole experience to learn the business better instead of just giving up. That's real grit. Adaptability.
Absolutely. And ultimately, all of this, it kind of culminates in this powerful call he makes for economic empowerment.
For the Black community specifically.
Yeah. His vision is to create, he says, thousands of Black-owned businesses to counter that historic lack of economic power, that lack of market share compared to the huge corporations. It's about systemic change through building businesses.
And he has a direct call to action for, well, for you listening right now.
Mm-hmm. What is it?
Support Black-owned brands, like Snoop Cereal, for example. Mm. Buy them, find them on Amazon or wherever.
And the reasoning behind that?
He's very clear. More sales mean they can give more back. to the community, helping the homeless, the elderly, creating education programs, jobs.
The support has a ripple effect.
Exactly. And he stresses, look, this is for everyone to support. It happens to be a Black-owned company, but it's addressing a systemic diversity issue, and backing it helps the wider community.
Makes sense. His overall message then seems to be what?
Support each other, cut off the dream killers, the negative people in your life, and just don't quit, even if success doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah. Endure the journey, find your purpose, understand that building something real takes time, and maybe collective effort.
So wrapping this up, what does it all mean for you? We've seen how Master P took this small settlement, this bit of seed money.
Yeah, that 10 grand.
And turned it into this huge, diverse empire, driven by, well, shrewd business thinking, an absolutely relentless work ethic.
Unbelievable work.
And this unwavering commitment to independence and also to community empowerment. He didn't just play the game they offered him. He rewrote the rules entirely.
He really did build his own game.
Master P's journey, it kind of reminds us that true no-limit success, maybe it isn't just about the quick money, the immediate gains.
That's longer term.
It's about building something so fundamentally strong, so rooted, that it can actually outlast you. Planting seeds, right, for generations to come.
Seeds that grow into an empire.
Yeah. So, the final thought maybe is, what seed are you planting today? What are you building that might grow into something your great-grandchildren could benefit from? Something to think about.
Brick by brick, he built that throne. Gold-plated hustle, empire grown. No handouts, just grind and grit. Master the plan, never would quit.
No limit dreams, cash flow streams. Independent hustle, broke the seams. Soulful echoes from the south we scream. Master the game,
chasing the gleam. Tank on the chain, heavy to weight. From the bayous to the pearly gates. Pin game sharp, cut through the hate. Catalog stacked, the mogul's fate. Blueprints written in blood and sweat. Legacy rising, no regret. Dirty beats pumping, the soul connects. Respect the name, the might protects. Yeah. So clear, no room for fear. From the bottom, built it pioneer. Masterpiece grind, the world should hear.
No limit dreams, cash flow streams. Independent hustle, broke the seams. Soulful echoes from the south we scream. Master the game, chasing the gleam.
Thank you for tuning in to the G. Ray Records podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode and want to dive deeper into the subject matter, be sure to visit the G. Ray Records Podcast Network. You'll find more insightful discussion, exclusive content, and all the latest updates. Until next time, keep the music alive.
Brick by brick, he built that throne. Gold-plated hustle, empire grown. No handouts, just grind and grit. Master the plan, never would quit.
No limit dreams, cash flow streams.